This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, it's the way you like me, fresh every day, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. It is the top of the hour. I am Bill Martinez. And if you missed it in the first hour, I thought it was important for me to repeat again what we shared with you in the first hour as we opened up the show today. And that was my apology for what aired yesterday. And I believe, unlike newspapers, sometimes when there's an error, they seem to put the retraction somewhere after the obituary. I believe that when there is an error that is made, and a retraction and an apology needs to be done at the time that was consistent when it first did. And so I wanted to repeat what I shared in the first hour. And that is my sincere regret that something aired yesterday that was rather coarse and should not have. There was some technical dysfunction that had occurred, and there was language that was expressed on the show that we do not support, endorse in any way. As you know, my heart, being a man of faith, I believe that we should have civil discourse. It should be respectful, and our language should be seasoned with some temperament. And yesterday there was some language that was carried on the show that is inexcusable. I don't endorse it. I apologize that it happened. We have made arrangements to make sure that this does not happen again. And I apologize for those of you that happen to be tuning in and heard it. And again, I offer my apology and hope that you will accept that. And know that we're doing everything on our end to make sure that that does not happen again. The challenge that we have today, obviously, is, and this is no excuse, it language flies around. I mean, it is amazing to me how casual some of the words that fly out there, how they come across. And it just seems to be, for me, you know, I'm just increasingly concerned about how casual we are. You know, as I mentioned before, it's been said that in our culture we have, as the Bible says, we just fail. We just don't blush anymore. You know, nothing embarrasses us. And I think that's, you know, not to be so Victorian about it, but I think it's shameful. Because I think that there are things that are happening. I mean, right now there's outrage because of Harvey Weinstein, and I think people are blushing over that and embarrassed. And you know, but this comes out of our culture. You know, this kind of behavior and something that has been going on for decades, not just something that just happened one time and down the road. But all this stuff and the civil discourse, the language that's been tossed around, all in the name of free speech and, you know, politics and, you know, the divide that we have, the disrespect, it doesn't advance the culture. It certainly doesn't unite us. It is a barrier, because then what happens in the conversation, instead of focusing on solutions, I got to process all this energy on overcoming, you know, the language that has been thrown out there. I mean, to what point? Why do you want, if you want to have a conversation with somebody, why do you want to beat them over the head with a hammer and somehow think that after you've done that, that you've convinced them of your point? I've never quite understood that, but that's what happens. I guess it's in our very nature that might makes right, right? And but we've learned the hard way time and again that might does not make right. Now, the challenge is can we reason together, especially with these major issues that we're dealing with in our country today? Can we reason together? Because the fact of the matter is that not any one person has all the goods. We need people from all sides participating in the solution. That's when it works. That's when we're united, and that's when great things happen out of this country. Yes, I believe that we can be great again, but even more so, I think we can even be greater. So that's my hope and ambition. And I thank you for being a part of it and for joining us every day right here on Bill Martinez Live. It's just about 5 minutes after the top of the hour. We've got more coming up.
How did you become addicted? A friend? Were you at a party and someone said, hey, try this? Then you got the cold sweats and started shaking. And the more you did it, the more it didn't work. So you switched to the needle. Now you're a train wreck. Drinking, drugging, broke. Your family hates you. And you hate you. Get out of your hell on earth now. Call the Detox and Treatment Helpline today for immediate help. In many cases, your insurance may cover the costs. We can't guarantee it, but we can guarantee we have what you need to change your life for the better. Pick up your cell phone and call right now. 855-700-2979. 855-700-2979. 855-700-2979. That's 855-700-2979.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. What's 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here. It's always great to have you along with us. And we've got a real special guest to talk about the big comeback out of the East, and we're talking New York, brand new book, Greater Than Ever, New York's Big Comeback. Dan Dockeroff is with us. He is the author of the book. Dan, of course, also, besides being the author, he was in the center of it all, the former deputy mayor of New York City. He tells the story of the city's comeback after 9/11, offering lessons in resiliency and a model for the rejuvenation of any city. Dan, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
That's great. Great to be on, Bill.
Well, what a story. I mean, I had a chance to finally go to New York a couple of years ago. Usually we go annually, but this time we took our time, was able to go in and see a lot of, just a lot of the new buildings and what has happened there. And, for me, it's kind of a love story with New York. I loved New York as soon as I got off the plane, you know, the first time probably about 20 years ago. I fell in love with the city. I know for you it took you a while, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. I describe it literally in the first sentence in the book that my relationship with New York was like hate at first sight. I first came when I was 10 and came for an afternoon to go to the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus at the then new Madison Square Garden. I tell you how old I am. And my first vision of New York was of this housing project just over the line as you crossed in from Connecticut, and I thought it looked like a monstrous Oz. And I yelled out from the back seat that I would never live in New York. And, you know, it was about 30 years later that I was sitting, you know, standing on a ledge overlooking Ground Zero, having been appointed deputy mayor of New York with responsibility for rebuilding Ground Zero, that I said, oh, you know, how did I get here? The reality is I moved to New York. My wife dragged me to New York and became a real lover of the city, and that was a total honor to serve.
I bet. It does have a special heartbeat. And for me, I was born and raised, Dan, in Southern California, and my friends go, you love New York. I go, I got to tell you, I love you. I went out and got the T-shirt right away. You know? I got the big art. I love New York.
T-shirt sellers in Times Square, thank you, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But for you, as you say, 30 years after later, you find yourself right after 9/11, and you're going to serve. I mean, what was that like for you, agreeing to serve in government in New York City at that time?
Well, you know, it's funny. I never had assumed I would ever go into government, never had any desire. In fact, when Mike Bloomberg was elected as mayor and then reached out to me and asked me if I'd join him in City Hall, I said no. And, you know, I thought about it, and he and I got together, and he convinced me in about 2 minutes to actually do it. but I really didn't even get announced in the job until 3 days after he was inaugurated, and that was only 3.5 months after 9/11. Mm-hmm. So when I started in the City Hall, you know, basically the fires were still smoldering at Ground Zero. The city's economy was devastated. Obviously, there was an emotional hole in the city's heart. Mm-hmm. We had no idea what to do. I mean, all of us came in with no experience in government. Our partners in the city council, because of term limits, had no experience at all either. And here we are at this moment of one of the city's greatest crises, yeah. You know, at point of sort of a national crisis, mm-hmm. with this massive destruction, all the lives who were tragically lost. We had to figure out what to do. And, you know, we managed to figure it out pretty quickly, and we all worked together. And, you know, the title of the book, Greater Than Ever, really is a riff off something Rudy Giuliani, who'd been the previous mayor, said on the day of 9/11. He said, you know what? New Yorkers aren't going to be intimidated by this. We're going to rebuild the city, and we're going to make it greater than ever. And, you know, we all committed to actually doing that. Mm-hmm. But it's not just having an attitude that helps you to get stuff done. You actually have to kind of work the system to get through plans and actually get them executed. And that's, I think, where a lot of the lessons for other cities, whether they've been through a disaster like we've seen in Houston or San Juan, Puerto Rico, or in Florida, or they've had a financial disaster like Detroit, or, by the way, they just want to rethink sort of their city and its competitive place in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the lessons are really somewhat consistent across all of them.
Well, it had to be tough. I mean, first of all, what Mayor Bloomberg had envisioned was a total makeover for the five boroughs. It wasn't just the area that had been attacked. It was like, let's look at the entire infrastructure. In some similarities, you know, I think of Puerto Rico right now with what they're starting to embark with. It's, you know, the bad news is you got devastated by two hurricanes. The good news is you have an opportunity for a do-over here, don't you, Ben?
You do, but you're going to need help, right?
Yes.
As the president unceasingly reminds people in Puerto Rico, you know, they were in financial trouble beforehand.
Right.
And, you know, while clearly, you know, on some level, people in Puerto Rico are going to have to kind of push this along, they are not going to be able to do it without dramatic federal assistance. And but that's what happened to us in Lower Manhattan. You know, we got $20 billion of help to rebuild, mm-hmm. and I think we used it really smartly. But as you point out, it wasn't for us just about Ground Zero. It wasn't just about the area surrounding it, which is Lower Manhattan, which is sort of New York's historic home. We took the opportunity to really rethink the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, New York had been a manufacturing town, believe it or not. You know, after World War II, a third of the jobs in New York were in manufacturing.
Wow.
About a million
amazing
manufacturing jobs. By the time we got there, it was about 100,000 or so. Mm-hmm. And yet nostalgia for manufacturing had left these huge swaths of land across the city, especially along the incredibly valuable waterfront, completely underutilized. And so we said, you know what, we've got to yank New York into the 21st century. So all across the city, we developed these plans for regeneration of former industrial areas and managed just over the course of the next few years to get them all approved and then get them going. And now as you look around the city, what you see is a lot of those places that we focused on are the areas that are generating the growth, the additional tax revenues for the city, which will undergird prosperity, hopefully, for generations to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you say, Dan, it started off with a vision. You know, Rudy Giuliani said, look, we're going to make it better than ever. And so Mike Bloomberg has to translate that and hand it off to you. Who was, because it always starts. I always see it starting off with a visionary, somebody who cast the vision. Was it Mayor Bloomberg that did that, or was it you and your team?
It was both. you know, look, anything I did was really under his leadership, and I had a magnificent team. You know, Mike was the kind of leader who you kind of dream about serving under, because, you know, his view of management of a government was his job was to pick great people, to give them authority, to organize government, to minimize the impact of bureaucracy, to encourage people to think big, and then to support them with resources and get their backs when necessary. And that combination, all of which is about leadership, really empowered people to do
right.
great things.
Well, Dan, we got to go to. I got to leave it right there. I'm sorry because we got to go to break. Be right.
Actual testimonials from real Numana customers.
I've tried all kinds of food storage, and Numana is by far the best.
I'm a single mom with two teenage boys and a full-time job. I don't always have time to cook a four-course meal. That's where Numana has been such a blessing. I can spend less time in the kitchen and more time on what matters most, like helping with homework.
Find out for yourself. Order online at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Numana is...
The stores I love to eat in.
Thepowermall.com.
Book Club Radio.
Today we're chatting with Mike Papantonio, leading trial lawyer and prolific author. His latest novel, Law and Vengeance, is a nonstop action-packed legal thriller. We spoke with him about the book and the real-life issues that inform and inspire his writing.
Law and Vengeance is based on many cases that we actually handle here. I mean, we're always going toe-to-toe against the defense industry for what they call whistleblower cases. That's the type of case that this book is involved with. The intensity of those whistleblower cases are not very different from what the book reads. I mean, there's in real life, hopefully nobody gets murdered, but the truth is the whistleblower cases are always stacked against the whistleblower in a big kind of way. And so all that whistleblower is trying to do is make sure that nobody gets hurt by a product that's put out there in the market by a manufacturer that knows the product has potential to cause harm but doesn't do anything about it.
On the heels of the critically acclaimed legal thriller, Law and Disorder, comes Law and Vengeance, the latest novel from famed trial attorney Mike Papantonio. Law and Vengeance follows the law firm of Bergman Dica Thomas, who is now in the crosshairs of a weapons manufacturer. But this is not a law firm that plays by all the rules. Based on a real case, Law and Vengeance, the riveting new legal thriller by Mike Papantonio, is available wherever books are sold.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at sling.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-765-9681 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-765-9681. Again, that's 800-765-9681.
Age-related macular degeneration is the leading cause of blindness in people over 55. But with treatment, it can be slowed down, stopped, and in some cases, reversed. Make sure you see your grandchildren grow. Protect your vision by requesting information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website fightblindness.org, where I found so much helpful information. Or again, call 1-800-BLINDNESS today.
Letting you know about it before the defecation hits the oscillation.
Bill Martinez, live.
Back with the America, just about 19 minutes after the top of the hour. Dan Doktoroff is with us, the former deputy mayor of New York City. His brand new book is called Greater Than Ever, which started the dream and the vision, as you stated earlier, Dan, of rebuilding New York City after this 9/11 attack, and what you did in the process, and what the team, under the guidance and leadership of Michael Bloomberg, was to completely transform New York's economy.
Well, that was the thing. And by the way, it wasn't just physical stuff. You know, I think we had the largest affordable housing program ever undertaken by an American city. We thought about sustainability in the environment in a truly holistic way, creating a path-breaking plan that has been emulated by cities around the world. You know, really what our philosophy was that if you want to be successful as a city, you got to grow. And then in order to grow, you have to invest smartly to accommodate that growth. And that when you do that, more and more people, and whether that's jobs, whether that is, you know, residents, whether that's visitors, actually want to come, and that cycle just keeps whirring. And that was the underlying philosophy, and part of the underlying philosophy too was that there is a role for government, right? That government is critical to making market work, making markets work, but it doesn't mean government has to do everything. But where markets don't work, you know, government should do the minimum necessary to get the private sector to act. Exactly. So this notion of kind of priming the pump, keeping it going with smart investment to help the city grow was really our philosophy that underpinned everything that we did.
Dan, were you concerned initially, because here you were trying to, you know, get the Freedom Towers up, you had, you know, you opened up the bidding and the ideas for people and construction people to say, okay, what are your ideas? What do you see happening here and replacing, you know, these two iconic monuments in New York City? And there was, you know, it was tough. You had to get through some of the politics of it. But it seemed like once you got beyond that, things started to come together and the inertia just seemed to, you know, carry the day for you. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, look, it took us really 5 years to develop a plan, figure out how to finance it, and really get moving. And I don't think that's so hard to understand when you consider that on 16 acres, we had to have a powerful memorial to what actually happened there. We're trying to rebuild 10 million square feet of office space. We had, you know, two train stations and, you know, performing arts center and, you know, all of that packed into this small space with all of the emotion on it. One thing that we had to do right away, though, in a way, and this was particularly emotionally difficult, was sort of recognize what the World Trade Center site was before 9/11 and what its impact was on the surrounding neighborhood. And the truth of the matter was it sort of deadened the entire area. And so establishing a set of principles right away that really erase some of those negatives that had existed before was the first thing that we had to do. And we were very, very aggressive in saying that, you know, forget about nostalgia. We understand, you know, kind of the emotion involved here, but we have to look beyond that and decide what's going to be best for the future, all at the same time memorializing the event in a way that was going to be meaningful. So it took time to get through that. The financial questions were incredibly difficult. The politics and who was going to get credit as in everything that happens in government, you know, took time to work through. But for the most part, everybody worked in a spirit of cooperation.
I got to tell you, Dan, though, the whole memorial area, what you were able to do, you know, you were able to kind of, how do I say, embrace and kind of magnify the hallowness of the area. You have this sense that of hallowed ground and memory and reverence. I mean, even to this day, you know, we were just there. We usually go to New York around Christmas time because there's just something magical about the city during, I tell people all the time, I think it's one of the wonders of the world that isn't quite been announced, but when you go there, you understand it. It's just so special. But particularly in that area, the sense of reverence that you feel there around the memorial. And the team, I just think they just were able to hold that together in a very unique and special way. And I'm grateful as a person who visits New York and has an affinity for the city.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, the team did an amazing, amazing job. But I think, you know, you're right. It's hallowed ground. It's sacred space. But at the same time, you know, it is surrounded by the bustle of the city. And there's no barriers between the bustle of the city and the hallowed ground. And I think that's exactly the way it ought to be. You know, New York didn't stop. New York had to figure out a way to move forward while respecting exactly what had happened. And I do believe that the architects and designers and engineers and the people, construction teams that did it, all found a way to find that balance. And, you know, I've heard very, very few people ever be critical of what actually occurred down there.
Well, you know, you go to the memorial and then you go below and see the commerce underneath and the retail operation out there. And it is magnificent. And I can't imagine anybody from New York having this sense of anything less than pride for what New York did, how the team came together to, as you say, do it greater than ever.
Yeah, I think that is the overwhelming sense of people here. Look, this is a city, in a way, New York just naturally of optimists. 40% of New Yorkers were born outside of New York, outside of the United States. Another 25% have one parent born outside the United States. And the 20%, I think, were like me, born somewhere in the United States, but outside of New York. So, you know, we're a city of immigrants of one form.
That's right.
You know, immigrants at the end of the day are optimists. You got to believe that where you're going is better than where you're coming from.
Right, exactly.
And that sort of optimism means you don't tend to look back too much. You tend to look forward. And that kind of optimism generates sort of an incredible energy. You know, it's what I think largely defines New York. So, you know, New York has got a special character. It's not for everyone, for sure. But what we tried to do is channel that energy, channel that optimism into a vision of the future that hopefully would produce opportunity for many, many more people. And it's not to say we got it right all the time. The book talks about some of the failures and mistakes we made, too. But you know, I think on balance, it's a much better place. It is greater than ever.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that
you weren't afraid to talk about the failures, because that's what happens. I mean, that's what causes us to grow and to appreciate. And just one sidebar comment about, immigrants. I mean, it's only fitting. You have Ellis Island, Lady Liberty there with her shining light of hope to all nations, to a way of governance and opportunity. And here it is, New York after 9/11, and what you were able to do really stands as a glaring and glowing example of hope for the future. Now, how did this experience combined with your time with the mayor lead you down the path of your second act in partnering with Google's Larry Page to start Sidewalk Labs?
So Sidewalk Labs is a company that's focused on bringing digital technology and other innovation into cities. And we're doing it in an unusual way, which is we'll partner with the city to create sort of the district of the future. More on that, you know, over the next several weeks publicly. But the intermediate step for me was after I left City Hall, I actually ran Mike Bloomberg's company, Bloomberg LP, which is actually the largest technology company in New York City. And so when I decided to leave that after he was done being mayor, I decided to combine sort of my experience in government with my experience running a technology company at a moment in history when I think we are on just the verge of kind of using these technological revolution in cities, where this combination of digital technologies that we're familiar with in our personal lives are going to start really impacting cities in a much more dramatic way.
Well, Dan, we got to wrap it up there. I could go on and talk more with you about Sidewalk Labs and that opportunity. But again, congratulations for greater than ever New York's big comeback. The book available at all the usual places, and it'll be linked on our website at BillMartinezLive.com.
career. Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park, or the beach, or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right, get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-981-9347, 800-981-9347. That's 800-981-9347.
Google has all but banned the movie series What Would Muhammad Do? It's a brilliant film on the true history and goals of Islam. This is the film Trump's enemies and holdouts from the Obama administration are terrified you will see. Pro-Islamic groups working with Google and other multi-billion dollar corporations have vowed to suppress the distribution of What Would Muhammad Do? When you see it, you'll understand why. Get your copy while you still can. Order the 4-DVD collection today for $39.95 plus shipping and handling. Or go online and download the entire movie series for just $19.95. But wait, for those who order in the next 30 minutes, we'll throw in a 9-part series on the Muslim Brotherhood absolutely free. Go to www.mdfilm.com or call 304-289-3700 now. That's www.mdfilm.com or call 304-289-3700 now.
If you're an unincorporated business owner, it's too late for you. That is, if you've already been sued and lost your home, your car, and your personal life savings. But if you haven't been sued yet, there is still time to incorporate and protect your personal assets. And the first step is just a phone call away. Because Incorporate.com is now giving away a free incorporation toolkit to all business owners, including exclusive information on how to start and grow your business. For your free incorporation toolkit, call now 1-800-936-9256. Incorporation is the shield that protects your personal assets. Without it, you could lose everything. That's why at Incorporate.com, they just make incorporating or forming an LLC quick and easy. They don't provide legal or financial advice. If someone sues tomorrow, will you lose everything? Don't wait until it's too late. Call now for your free incorporation toolkit. Hurry, they're still giving them away for free at 1-800-936-9256. Call 1-800-936-9256. That's 1-800-936-9256.
Someone once said, live free or die, right? Bill Martinez live.
We're back with you, America. Bill Martinez here with you. It's always good to have you along with us. Well, certainly in the conversation, as they say, with Chuck and Nancy, our president realized that DACA was very important to them, as it is to the rest of America. But let's face it, we got the art of the deal president in place, and just like everybody else, probably tired of hearing about comprehensive immigration reform and the border wall and all the restraint and resistance about it. So, hey, why not let's wrap it up all in one big package and let's deal with everything while we're dealing with DACA. Here to talk and explain more is Chris Chmielewski. He is Numbers USA Director of Policy and Activism. Chris, good to have you with us. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Well, the president rolled out his plan, and I think much to the surprise of the Democrats and to Chuck and Nancy, 70 points. I mean, you know, it was like, wait a minute, that's not what all we talked about, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. But you mentioned the art of the deal. So, hey, let's throw everything out on the table. And, you know, it's always easier to negotiate from a very, very lengthy wish list than it is to say, yeah, this is the only thing that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get to the table and they say, well, we're going to take a little bit of that away from you, well, it's hard to win that way. So exactly. Throw everything at him.
Exactly.
Say, okay, now tell us
what you don't like.
And all this stuff that's out there anyway, Chris, is stuff that people have been debating about. They've been frustrated over whether it has to do with the wall and all the other points that Donald Trump is addressing here. Sanctuary cities. Now, I guess the new idea is, hey, forget about cities. We'll just become a sanctuary state like they did in California, right?
In California, right, right. Yeah, you know, the American people have been frustrated with the immigration system in this country since the mid-90s, mm-hmm. really, when it exploded, and we've been given out more than a million green cards every single year, not to mention the massive flows of illegal immigrants coming into the country. So there's been a lot of frustration, and it culminated with last year's presidential election. Mm-hmm. You know, Trump listed all these items in his principles. He said 70 items. He had been talking about a lot of these on the campaign trail and mentioned a lot of them that August campaign speech that he gave last year. Mm-hmm. But again, these are things the American people have been talking about. They've been familiar. They know about chain migration and they want to end it. They know about the visa lottery. They want to end it. They know about E-Verify, and they think employers should be held accountable if they hire illegal workers.
Exactly.
And should be forced to use a system to verify the eligibility of their workers. So these are all things that have been discussed, mm-hmm. talked about. There's really no surprises on there.
Right.
And it's all things that have been included, you know, whether it be or discussed in the past, whether it be through the Jordan Commission, which was the last U.S. commission on immigration reform, or even in the Gang of Eight bill. A lot of these enforcement items were in the Gang of Eight bill, and even some of the legal reforms were in the Gang of Eight bill. Of course, that bill was going to grant amnesty to 11 million people, though, and triple legal immigration.
Now, how do you resist the president's call for a border wall, which he's been talking about, as you said, and more deportation agents, a crackdown on sanctuary cities, and stricter limits to chain migration? This probably, you know, is part of that 20-80 rule. This covers about 20% of the, of the topics. And if you handle these 20, you're going to go a long way in solving the immigration issue, aren't you?
Yeah, you absolutely will. One that I would throw in there, the mandatory E-Verify.
Yes, exactly. I'm with you on that. Right.
Yeah, you secure the border and you take away the jobs magnet, take away the ability for folks in the country illegally to access public welfare benefits and to actually live in the United States comfortably, or take away sanctuary cities so they, you know, they're not protected by their local governments, mm-hmm. by the local governments. It's going to be very difficult for folks to live here illegally. So not only will a lot of them go home, but new ones will be less incentivized to come here. You know what? All these things that we've talked about, they've got wide support, broad support amongst the American people. The only ones that don't seem to support them are the Democrats and the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. It's a lack of courage on their part, Chris, frankly.
Yeah.
They don't have the courage for it. And the American people are saying enough of this because it only makes good business sense. I mean, look at it. If you're controlling if you were in charge of immigration tomorrow, you'd want the best of the best. You belong to a great country. We offer a lot of benefits here. And, you know, the rules to play under our current immigration system, not the one that's being violated, or maybe the one that's being violated, I guess, is that, hey, look, at you got to bring something to the dance. You know, what are you going to do to advance the cause here? And along with it, you're going to love this country so much, which has been the tradition of immigrants, that you want to assimilate. And we know that when people assimilate, they do better. They're able to, bring their families along. It's win-win all around the horn here. So we ignore those because of some, some false compassion, which isn't good for the immigrants. Now all of a sudden we force illegal immigration and we create this undermarket and this black world, this black market that exists that involves everything from sex slavery and abuse of labor and, theft and fraud and, the whole gamut.
Yeah, and it's really those things that you discussed, the low-skilled mass legal immigration, the illegal immigration, this underground black market, labor market that we have. You know, the ones who are affected are American workers. They're the ones who have to face more competition. They're the ones who are seeing downward pressure put on their wages because there's such a large labor pool for a shrinking amount of jobs,
mm-hmm.
As the country becomes more advanced, more technologically advanced, there's less, you need less people to do some of the jobs that we've had in the past, although it is creating higher capacity jobs. And that's, again, what the Trump White House immigration principles get to. You know, they're going to get rid of the entire legal immigration system and replace it with this points-based merit system, which, as you said, it'll be easier for folks to assimilate, and they'll be coming in doing jobs that we truly have a shortage, and they're going to help, they're going to benefit American workers and their wages by coming in. And that's what this merit-based points system that he's proposing would do as well.
Yeah, well, Chris, to be honest about it, I mean, in a way, we're taking advantage of some overseas talent, but we're not getting a whole lot of benefit from it. You know, the Silicon Valley has got, a lot of great talent outside of the country, but where is that money being spent? It's not being spent here in the United States. It's being spent in their home countries. We want that money to be spent here so that it all is part and parcel to increasing the GDP. I mean, they already said, Donald Trump, there was no way he was going to get 3%. I mean, the CBO and all the brain trusts of our government said the new normal is like maybe about 2%. That's all we could hope for. Thank God Donald Trump wasn't paying too much attention to that, because here we are, almost right away. He's at 3%. They had to adjust it up. I mean, which is, quite unusual, because with the Obama administration, we always had adjustments, but they're always going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and with these, you mentioned the tech tycoons out in Silicon Valley, and there is some tremendous talent around the world, and the United States should be able to tap into it through our immigration system. But in their minds, they say, yeah, we want access to the best and the brightest, but we also want access to cheap foreign labor, and that's really where the issue comes in. You know, they want to bring in folks so they can pay them as little as possible, and the bottom line is people that are coming in from outside of the country are willing to work for less. Yes. And that's a benefit for employers. So, of course, employers are going to want this massive immigration system with lots of loopholes and the ability to bring in and hire whoever they want.
Right.
But that doesn't benefit the country. It doesn't benefit the country at the end of the day, and you're not going to get the 3% GDP growth that you're talking about if you continue to do that.
Well, hopefully with the upcoming tax reform, cutbacks on some of these regulations, it might start to make sense for American companies to be more pro-American and be able to find a way to be profitable under a new system under the Donald Trump administration. That could be our only hope. Chris Chmielewski from Numbers USA. Chris, thank you so much for the insight. Appreciate it. We got to keep them honest, right?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you. Take care. Have a great day.
Thank you, too.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. Money causes stress and uneasiness in our closest relationships, according to Bank of America's new Friends Again report. In fact, more than 50% of the population has seen a friendship end over money, and it is not always a lot of money that will cause a relationship rift. Nearly 40% of consumers say they would end a friendship over $100 or less. But there are ways we can salvage a relationship before it goes south over an IOU. Dr. Melanie Ross Mills, relationship expert.
Talking about money doesn't always have to be awkward. If you follow some simple tips, having an honest conversation is the best way to avoid these issues. Coordinate shared expenses in advance to avoid unexpected spending. Communicate openly with your friends about money owed, and use mobile apps like the Bank of America app for a simple way to send, request, and receive money from friends, no matter where they bank.
For more, visit bankofamerica.com/friendsagain.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield. And and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-536-4436. That's 800-536-4436. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-536-4436.
You've heard the phrase, you are what you eat? Not true. Actually, you are what you can absorb. So if the vitamins and supplements you now take are not being absorbed, what good are they? Introducing Protovite, proprietary liquid system that allows premium quality nutrients to positively affect the blood in an astonishing 5 minutes. Watch our amazing 2-minute live blood cell video at TrueHealthFacts.com. That's TrueHealthFacts.com. Then call 502-410-3411. Protovite is nutrition you can feel. Protovite is nutrition that gets in.
Investing is a long-term process. How many times can you think of in the last decade that the stock market has destroyed retirement funds for people just like you and me? For your existing IRA, you need the security that gold has provided for centuries. Remember, gold has never been worth zero. Capital Gold would like to introduce you to the Home Storage Gold IRA. It's a self-directed IRA set up with all the protection and tax benefits of an LLC. But the big difference in this IRA is you invest in gold and you hold it in your possession. You can't do that with stocks. That's security. You can transfer any type of IRA hassle-free in days. Please call right now and learn more, and we'll waive the $500 setup fee and give you a free safe to store your gold. 800-535-7789. 800-535-7789. 800-535-7789. That's 800-535-7789.
Are you a Catholic with traditional values, seeking traditional worship, but are fed up, angry, and disgusted by corruption in the church? If so, then consider Servants of the Holy Family, a community of priests and brothers who are fighting those who have infiltrated the church, intending to create a one-world government and one-world religion. Help and support this great cause. Visit survey.org, spelled S-E-R-V-I.org. Come to our Mass. Become a priest or brother now at survey.org.
Spirit of Don't Tread on Me Alive. Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. You know, the whole idea of Don't Tread on Me Alive is understanding first that you're fixed on a certain position, that you know what it is that you stand for and what you're willing to give up. As my old mentor used to say, are you willing to fall on your sword for that? And when you think about this great country of ours, you know, and our founding fathers and those before us, many that went to war for the sake of freedom, they were willing to fall on their sword for this great country. And that is very meaningful. I think some people take that for granted because of social justice and the argument out there. It's like we were talking with Rob Bushka in the first hour with NBC Sports. You know, some of the language, you know, that I think is rather reckless. And seems to, support, a very myopic position that abandons any value of history, much less the truth of history. You know, when Spike Lee, who I said, I respect his talent, I think the guy's brilliant. But when he says things that references the NFL players as if they're on the plantation, it's like, wait a minute. How do you get there? I mean, the NFL players own 55% of the business. I never heard of a slave owning 55% of the plantation. So, you know, how does that serve the ideal of knowing what you stand for? It just confuses the issue and does nothing to bring any kind of harmony or unity to the conversation, much less to the end game. And that's the question with all the things that are happening in our society today that I want to ask is, what is your end game? You know, what's Antifa's end game is clear. I mean, they are a force unto themselves that want to upend our Constitution and the very things that we believe in. But if we don't know what we stand for, then we take a knee or we sit down and resist. And even then, I question and say, well, how much of this do you really know about? Most of these football players, they may talk about social injustice. In many cases, it's to some degree vicarious. They've been coddled, because when you have this kind of talent, you get a pass as you grow up, whether it's in, high school when that talent becomes very obvious. And when you get to college, you're coddled and given special opportunities, classes you don't have to go to, that you're given A's and all that. We've heard all the stories, not to mention being able to have some sense of entitlement and extra forgiveness for errors in life and judgment that you make along the way. Because after all, you're a superstar. You are the big man on campus, and you're off to some sort of incredible stardom. And then you get to the NFL or NBA or, Major League Baseball, whatever it is, whatever professional sport, which, here you are, you're representing less than 1% of all the athletes on the planet. And it's a rather privileged opportunity to be paid that kind of money to what? Enjoy a kid's game? I mean, wow, what a blessing. And to somehow become, confused in the process. And I think this is what happens, is people have become confused and they don't know what they stand for. So now all of a sudden, the cool thing to do is, I'm going to live in my blackness, or I'm going to live in my own special segment of society and culture and claim some sort of right and need for reparation. Forget about history. Forget about anything that this country is all about, because it's easier, I guess, in some sense, to get emotional, and especially when you're around a lot of other emotional people. And then you get everybody yelling and screaming and burning houses down. And, like that when I was in Los Angeles during the Watts riots, I'll never forget this interview with a newscaster who was there on scene. And he was surrounded by some rather emotional blacks at the time. And the reporter, I don't know why he asked the guy the question, but he asked him, he says, hey, so now what are you going to do? And thinking that maybe the question was, what next? You got the Watts riots here. We got the town burning and everything else going on. All these riots. What are you going to do now? He says, well, I think I'm just going to go home and go to bed. And the guy says, you idiot, you burnt your house down. So it's like sometimes it gets so emotional and that dysfunctional that we don't even realize the damage that we're doing to ourselves, which is what happened with the NFL. They got emotional, didn't think all this stuff out, and now here it is. They played this, and they've done some incredible amount of damage to their brand. And it's unfortunate because many people look forward to the NFL. And the relationship they had with their teams, and now, viewership is down, and we know what happens with patterns. People do things based on patterns and models that they're used to, family time, things that they do together. And now families are making other choices with their time. Instead of being in front of the TV all weekend watching football, it might only be one football game instead of two or three over the weekend that they watched. And now more family time. So not all is bad. And I think that people are starting to realize in that process that, hey, wow, I've missed my family. This is kind of nice for us to be able to get together outside of the ritual of the NFL. But they've taken a major hit. And, the question that I was asking Rob Bushka is, does Roger Goodell survive? Does he become a $40, $50 million scapegoat on this whole deal? And some would say, well, he's not a scapegoat at all. I mean, after all, he's the leadership. He gets paid a lot of money to support the interests of of the owners, and what's of interest for the owners, because keep in mind that the football players themselves own 55% of what's happening at the gate. They in a sense are owners as well. So he's there to watch their interests, but he's not convinced as to what America is all about. And maybe he's gotten caught up in. In the idea that America is not as good and has become very casual about these things that it represents. And this is an organization that decided a number of years ago to go head on into the support of the military. Yes, they were being paid as they should be and compensated, and the government was paying money because they were using it as a showcase for recruitment and, you know, that sort of thing. And I don't have a big problem. I know some people did, but I don't have a big problem with that. Like, okay, they're paying for it, and look what you get. I mean, you get jets. I mean, I don't know if you realize, but, you know, just to fire up one jet, how expensive that is. That's a lot of money. I remember one time in L.A., we had an owner of a company that owned jets, and we needed to get a talent from, you know, from Texas up to Seattle. And I said, well, you know, talking to the chief operating officer, I said, well, how about if we get, you know, his jet and just fly him out there? He says, Bill, do you realize how much that costs? I said, I really don't, you know, educate me. He says, well, just to fire the jet up, and this is a private jet, just to fire it up is $40,000. I go, so you got to imagine an F-18 or even four of them, right, in formation flying over, how much money that represents. But that aside, let's get down to what it's all about and what it is that we believe in and what we're willing to fall on our sword for. You know, and this is where America is today. It has been challenged. These religious beliefs that we've held to for so long, as I mentioned earlier, when President Obama made the announcement to the world and to us in this country, I mean, I was shocked. I'm going, wait a minute, this is the President of the United States making the announcement that we're no longer a Christian country. And this is supposedly coming from somebody who says he's a Christian. So what happened? When did that stop being, as Randy Forbes asked that, you know, incredible question, when did America stop being a Christian country? When you go back through the history and you see time and again God's hand upon this country. But here it is, President of the United States making the announcement and doubling down on the sentiment that was growing in this country that we don't need God. We can turn our back on God. You know, after 9/11, echoing the same thing as Jonathan Cahn said in The Harbinger, echoing the same defiance that the children of Israel did when they came under attack, said, well, the reason we came under attack is because, you know, the walls weren't thick enough, they weren't big enough. We hadn't adapted to modern technology even back then. And so we heard the same echoes, same sentiments again after 9/11. Very few people said, could this be a judgment from God? Are all of a sudden, are we unprotected because of what we've done in this country? And there are many people believe that this country is way past judgment. It's by God's grace only that we aren't judged. And I know some people are looking at the fires, you know, north and south in California. We've got the hurricanes that have hit here. Even Mexico with earthquakes there. Wow. I mean, is this God's judgment? I mean, it's a good question. And I think the reason that people even ask that question is because I believe in your heart of hearts you realize to some degree that we deserve God's judgment. And here we are today with an opportunity to turn back to God. Because God always says, and he's always the same yesterday, today, and forever, I'm there waiting for you with open arms. You know, he didn't expect us to be perfect. If he did, then his son, in the form of Jesus Christ coming to save us, would have been unnecessary, right? So for those of you that have ears to hear and that this makes sense, I hope it's an encouragement to you to live boldly, to live righteously, to pursue those things that are godly and that promote the image of God in your life and in your family, because that's what is needed and what will happen, you know, and what will have to take place in order for this country to be revived and for us to experience a revival, maybe so. Thank you so much for sharing a part of your day with us. I appreciate your time. We will see you mañana, same time, same place, right here on the SDG Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.